Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Oregon. Retail business in America is sick. The economy has taken a toll on our traditional buying habits, and the industry is looking for a cure. Meet the doctor, Dr. Herb Sorensen. He's the CEO and president of TNS Sorensen, a consulting firm that specializes in observing and measuring shoppers' behavior within the walls of a store. He is the author of an incredibly detailed new book, Inside the Mind of the Shopper, The Science of Retailing, which breaks down what shoppers are thinking in large part based on their eye movements while shopping. If you're a professional within the retail industry, I think you'll find Sorensen's observations of great use. And if you're a shopper, you may gain some great insight about the way successful retailers market their wares to you. Dr. Sorensen, Herb, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. And I might make a comment by way of introduction here.
Sure.
One of the things is that, I often present to brand manufacturers and their retailer partners, and I always tell them, well, I'm here to represent the voice of the shopper themselves. And the reason for that is there's a lot of times there is kind of an adversarial relationship presumed between retailers and shoppers with a tug of war going on. When the reality is, I mean, shoppers go into stores because they want to buy things, and it's all about expediting that process.
I would have guessed that the tug of war would be between the retailers and the suppliers more than the retailers and the customers.
Yes, I see you've been around the block a bit. That's certainly true. That's certainly true. But as retailers turn their attention to actually selling as opposed to buying, and as a good friend of mine pointed out, retailers don't make money selling, they make money buying. And as you've alluded, it's their relationship with the brand suppliers that generates the lion's share of their profits. We could talk about it in some detail. But wanting to look at the shopping side of the thing, and I will say there is a massive global trend going on of retailers attempting to become astute at selling to the shoppers. As a matter of fact, I have a presentation coming up at Shopper Insights Conference next month on the return of personal selling to the retail space. And by that, I'm not talking about having clerks running around the store offering to help you buy your toothpaste. But maybe that would be of interest to your listeners.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Okay, well, here's, because this is quite fascinating from a historical point of view. 100 years ago, retailing largely became self-service. Obviously, there are fine clothers, jewelers. I mean, there's still a lot of personal selling goes on at retail. But the mass of retailing became self-service, and this was a consequence of the fact that production, 100 years before that, had become mass, okay, and distribution and all of those things happened. Ultimately, retailers became self-service, and you had mass retailing begin in a major way. And at that point, retailers basically moved out of the selling phase. I mean, I know they think of that they're selling, but they're not really. They're stocking small warehouses, and the shopper does the selling themselves. That's what self-service is. Well, so who's going to do the selling? Well, up steps companies like Procter & Gamble with their soap operas, and the mass media became the replacement for personal selling, and you move to mass media, okay, over the past 20 years, and the soap operas and all of the stuff that went with that. Over the past 20 years, there's been fragmentation, serious fragmentation of that media market, and an increasing interest in selling in the store. unfortunately, most of the personal selling skills that are required were lost. And if you want to, and are now in the process of being recovered, and if you want to see what I mean when I say personal selling, just check Amazon, who I think is one of the finest retailers in the world. When you show up at Amazon, they immediately target you, they make offers to you, they tell you what other people are buying. I mean, they are assisting, so there is an assistance process. And this will accelerate in the bricks and mortar stores as there is more, for example, two-way digital media, whether it's actually the huge thing that's going to come down very soon is going to be the PDA as the deployment of the Internet in the store. My point is simply this. One of the reasons that a lot of in-store media has crashed and burned, or another way to say is burned hundreds of millions of dollars of people's money to no effect, is that they were attempting to essentially use the limited amount of personal selling skills developed in the television and other advertising and to move that into the store. And that's not the challenge. The challenge is basically is the Amazon challenge. I mean, you need to think Amazon if you're working in store, and you don't have to have technology in order to do that. So that's largely what my focus is today. I'm not all about technology. I'm all about what does the shopper want to buy, you know, how much do they want to buy, and where in the store do they want to buy it, and how can we pay attention to the shopper and respond efficiently to them. And to me, one of the saddest things is the massive amount of sales that do not occur that the shopper wanted to occur. They were there for the purpose, but they just gave up.
Now, this is something that's very interesting in your book. You talk using the eye tracker, you see where people look and where they don't look. And one of the things you talk about is a lot of times people come in and they can't even find what they came into the store for.
Exactly. Those are the two barriers to sales at any store. The two barriers are where is whatever, you know, where is it? And then when you get there, there's such a massive array to select from that you're then faced with the overwhelming problem. Which one of these is for me, or is any of them, or what? And both of those processes can be expedited, and the overwhelming factor from the shopper's point of view, whether they articulate it or not, is time. And just to give you an example, let's say you're wheeling your shopping cart down the aisle, you wheel into the carbonated soft drinks aisle, and you want to buy something. Now, as a matter of fact, this is a pretty confusing aisle to shop. If it takes you a minute to find what you want, you're unlikely to spend another minute finding another one. Okay, I mean, this is drawing on the old rule, you know, close early and close often. The faster you sell, the more you will sell. I mean, you know, we know, I mean, this is the rule that Amazon used. They got 50 million books, but they're trying to get you to the one you want or will buy right now, because the faster you do that, here's the point. All the time you spend closing a sale is time you can't you can't get from the shopper to work on another sale. So one of the major themes of my book is simply this: stop wasting the shopper's time.
I like that. I like that a lot. Now we've got a call for you. So let me bring
sure.
the caller on. We won't keep them waiting much longer. I think this is wait a minute. Let's see. Okay, I think this is Easy Rider, who's been in our the live web chat that accompanies Mr. Media interviews. Is that you, Easy?
Yes, sir. How are you today, Mr. Media?
Good. Thanks for calling in. You have a
Great.
Question for Dr. Sorensen?
Yeah. Hi, Doctor. How are you today?
Very well. And yourself?
Good, good. Real good. A little cloudy here in Pittsburgh today. But besides that, I wanted to ask you, I suffer from a disability that doesn't allow me to leave my home. So I rely on the Internet for all my shopping needs, okay?
Yeah.
And really, you know, with the Internet, the only thing I miss going to the malls is the touchy-feely part of shopping, because I really don't go and be able to touch my products and actually physically see them before I buy them. But I've noticed with Amazon, and I'm not just plugging Amazon, but I've shopped a lot of the companies, Target, Biz, all of them. And, you know, Amazon really gives you the next best thing to being able to actually touch it and feel it. And what I like about Amazon and shopping on the Internet is if I really don't like the product, just for the fact that I don't like it, they will return it, and I get no problems at all. And I attach a note to it that I explain it to them. I just didn't like this product, and I've never had a problem getting out with a return with them.
Well, I can see we're certainly in full agreement on, you know, on Amazon. But addressing, you know, the touchy-feely issue.
Yes.
And of course, this is the one huge advantage that the that the offline retailer has and is likely to have, you know, forever, because there is an experience in the retail space, and there is a lot of stumbling around in terms of, you know, what that is and what do we have to provide and whatever. But the thing that you're referring to is the ability to pick up the product, turn it over, look at it, and so on.
Yeah.
And I will say that that there are, in fact, we have a sister company that that is heavily involved in the virtual reality space. And the only thing keeping them from providing much more realistic experience in home is bandwidth. And you know, when if you have massive bandwidth, they can
right.
deliver a great deal more experience to you. That's the bottom line on that. So the good news is the long term prospects for an improved online experience with more sensory feeling is there. But the reality is one of the reasons Amazon is so good is because they have monitored the click stream very very carefully. And respond to every movement that you make. I mean, they're on top of it right now. They're responding, and they have a massive amount of learning behind that. And when you look at it, what we do in the store is we track the carts and baskets and the shoppers on a second-by-second basis, the same way Amazon does. So we have what we call the in-store click, click, click of the shopper, which parallels the online click, click, click at Amazon. And this is quite shocking to a lot of people, but Peter Fader and Wendy Moe actually provided one chapter in my book, and they discuss this relationship between the online click stream and the offline click stream. And from a statistical and pattern point of view, there are amazing similarities. That's because in your mind you have to go through the same steps. I mean, you're looking, you're checking, you're browsing, and now you're getting zeroed down onto what you're gonna, where you're mm-hmm. likely gonna make a selection, and finally the selection process occurs. I
right.
mean, and this is why deployment of the internet in the store is so important for this return to personal selling ultimately. And,
right.
and as a matter of fact, this is a done deal. I mean, you know, right now. You can take your cell phone in the store, and you can use the camera to snap a shot of the barcode on a product, this is some technology that I believe Microsoft has pioneered. Anyway, and you essentially have scanned the product, and you can pull down all kinds of information about the product.
I didn't know that.
Including comparative prices. Now, look. This stuff is, you know, cutting edge. It's out there right now, but there are many companies that are working furiously to leverage this in a large way. Now you're in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure. Although, do you have Giant in Pittsburgh?
No.
No. Okay. Giant Eagle is probably over there. Anyway,
Giant Eagle, yes.
Yeah. Okay, it's a different company. But anyway, Stop and Shop, which is part of the Ahold family up in Boston, has you know, close to 100 stores equipped with a personal shopping assistant. They call it Motive Shopper, but it's basically your handheld device, whether it's a phone, a PDA, or whatever, will ultimately be able to morph into this. Retailers are looking at providing the devices, which obviously then they can have proprietary, you know, advanced features that they can't have. The most advanced one is MediaCart. And MediaCart, of course, this is the full deployment. I mean, you essentially have a laptop mounted The screen is out on the front of your cart, so it's not jammed right up in your face. But this gives you full Amazon capability in the store. And, you know, I'm just telling you, this is a very, very active area. And two things, the virtual reality will ultimately bring you more of the in-store experience into your home. And at the same time, deployment of the Internet in one form or another will essentially merge the home experience with the online with the in-store experience.
Yes, I feel I get a lot more information off of the Internet than I would going to a store.
Yeah,
when you go to the store, you don't bring, like you said, you don't bring up all the description of the product. You know, they got the price on it, they got a barcode, and that's it.
But let me point this out to you. Because of your circumstances, you're heavily involved with cognitive purchasing. I mean, it's a very mental activity. Okay, a lot of what happens in the store is emotive, not cognitive. In fact, you probably exercise significantly more discipline on your shopping simply because it is a cognitive process for you. You know, and what you said you were missing was the emotive part, and that's true. But there's a book out right now called How We Decide, outstanding book. But it goes along with like Gladwell's Blink the How We Decide points out that the emotive decision making is superior in many ways to cognitive. Depending on the circumstances, so if you read, I'd recommend that book. Of course, I always recommend my book, you know. But I've already read my book. See, so.
Well, we're going to try to get your book and read it, Doctor. Is it available in the local bookstore?
You can get it on Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah, InsideTheMindOfTheShopper.com. It's one word.
InsideTheMindOfTheShopper.com.
And I have a website, InsideTheMindOfTheShopper.com. You can go there, and actually that links to some blog material that I have, and there will be a link to this podcast there also in the not distant future. So
great. Well, thank you for answering my question.
You bet.
And Mr. Media, thanks. always a pleasure.
Thank you for calling. Good to talk
You're
to
welcome.
You.
Sure.
All right. Take care. You know, as we're talking about technology in the stores, I'm thinking, I'm in Florida, where Publix supermarkets are predominant.
And one of the best retailers in the country, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But there is one little fault that I would have for them. I guess maybe it has something to do with what service you have, but most people I know find that when they go into a Publix, they're cut off from the world, that their cell phones do not work in Publix stores. So I think if they're going to... I assume that there's some kind of a dampening of some
well, I don't
there.
Know whether look, I mean, I have no idea whether this is applicable to Publix, but you know, a business can acquire a jammer that will kill all cell phones and there has been extensive discussion on this issue as to whether whether this is legitimate, what if people have an emergency. I mean, there's a lot of factors. I mean, I'm not into that, but I have seen seen the discussions. So maybe that's what they do. I don't know.
Well, and I want to come back to what we were talking about before. But first, I did want to ask you, since we've been talking about Amazon and online retailing versus bricks and mortars, I mean, it seems like 10 years ago, right around the time of the big Internet bubble and then popping that bubble, there was an expectation that online retailing was really going to replace a good deal of bricks and mortar, and that would be for both
NetGrocer, Webvan, you know,
yeah.
You remember those.
Yeah, absolutely. And
some of them have survived. Peapod, I mean, you know, that's part of Ahold right now, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't it become bigger than it did? And is it what you were talking to a caller about? I mean, the emotive sale, the tactile.
No, there is that issue. There's the emotive and the tactile and the physical experience. But there is another very, very, very important point here that most people are not aware, and I know if you saw the book, you know this, that more often than any other time, people buy a single item when they go into even a supermarket or a Walmart supercenter. One is the most commonly purchased number of items in any store in the world. Okay, and as a matter of fact, in supermarkets, half of all shopping trips result in the purchase of five or fewer items. Mm-hmm. Now, the point of this is these are quick trips. Okay, these are, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. But just to point out to you that, and Mike Twitty of Unilever has a chapter in my book also on the quick trip, as well as the chapter that I did there. But one of the characteristics of the quick trip, I mean, the major defining point of the quick trip is either of two things. It's all immediacy, but it's either immediate consumption or immediate need. I mean, like, for example, you wanted to use this device that requires batteries, and lo and behold, the batteries are dead, and you go to the drawer, and there's none there. What are you going to do? Well, you run around the corner and, you know, get some batteries, or, I mean, whatever. And this is the thing, is that the quick trip does not represent, and this is Mike Twitty's work, which was extremely valuable from my point of view. The quick trip does not result in the purchase of a specific selection of merchandise, because as a matter of fact, your immediate need could be very widespread. Now, for immediate consumption, I mean, that kind of limit, you know, that kind of prunes it down. But if you understand, the quick trip is all about immediacy, and immediacy is not going to be served by the internet unless it's a book or something you could download, a Kindle, or where you could download, or music you can download. Okay. But the immediacy means that, the offline retailer is not going away until, we get beam me up, Scotty, And as a matter of fact, IBM has done some serious work on teleporting. I don't know whether you're aware of that. You can find it on their website. But the reality is we're not there. I mean, this is way out there. And the emotional thing and all of these other factors, I mean, 100 years from now, who knows what shopping will be. But, for most of our lifetimes, I mean, there's going to be stores, offline stores.
Right.
So,
the quick trip really hit me, especially because I did one of those yesterday. And it's interesting. Those are more profitable, right, for the stores?
Oh, yes. Well, they can be. They can be. Unfortunately, and this is one of the major pieces of advice that I have for retailers, and is simply this. I mean, first of all, there's way too much obsession by everybody in the shopper world about money. And the reason is because it's easy. You can count it. I mean, you take it to the bank. And I mean, this is a very important factor. I'm not trying to downplay that. But when it comes to a shopper buying, money is a far less important factor, and particularly for quick trips. Quick trippers close on the sale very rapidly. I mean, they spend money at a hellacious rate. When you run into the store and you want 1, 2, 3, 4 items, whatever, you aren't standing here studying and weighing and whatever. Again, I point out, a lot of shopping is not cognitive in nature. It is not thought through, whatever. It's instinctive. People always argue about how many decisions, purchase decisions, are made in the store. And the reality is large numbers of them aren't made at all in the classic decision sense. Or if there is a decision, it was made 5 years ago when you got in the habit of buying this, and you now buy it instinctively. It isn't a decision process. That's all wrong to think of it that way. So, So the point is that the quick tripper is in for speed and are more than willing, to spend a little extra. They aren't even going to know they spent a little extra. It isn't. Their time is far more valuable. Now, unfortunately for the shopper, you don't have a time awareness. I mean, you don't sit and shop with a stopwatch, and you're not aware of that. Now, I measure it. So I know how people are responding to time, and I can tell you the faster stores close sales, the more that store will sell, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the most fundamental learnings that's come out of our many years of study here, and that is that for the shopper, in many ways, it's all about the speed. In fact, even end caps where they usually have promotions or whatever, Glenn Turbeck did a study on this and showed that 50% of the people who bought an item on promotion in the store were unaware that it was a promotional price. And of the half who were aware, 50% of them didn't care.
Mm.
Which means, I mean, and this is very, we don't have time to go into this in great detail, but I just will tell you that money is a lot less important at retail for the shopper and for the retailer, you know, than and the brand than people think. And so the point is, when I get on shows with consumer organizations of one type or another, whatever, you know, they're always in this mode that, well, you know, how can people save money? Well, like they wanted to. Yes, there is a small vociferous group that is out to save money, and I would never recommend a store abuse their shoppers by overcharging for things. But on the other hand, you go down the street and buy milk at a convenience store, and you're paying 50 cents or a dollar more than you would at the supermarket, typically,
right.
or whatever. And nobody feels bad. Why are you doing that? It's convenient. It's all about time, you know, and how handy it is. So this isn't a matter of it's a matter of the retailer and the brand aligning with the shopper and delivering good value. Good value may mean, hey, you can get in this store and out, okay, in 15 minutes, where it takes you 20 in another store.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's that worth? Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's worth a heck of a lot to most people. And it isn't just the speed, you know, it's the angst, the misery of making decisions, et cetera, et cetera.
Herb, two of the points that you make, I think these are connected. You stop me if I'm wrong here. One is on with regard to the short trip, that retailers can make a lot more money and increase sales if they focus on the short trips, just trying to get people to buy one, two, or three more of the vital items that they need. But the other thing you say, and I think this is connected, is that retailers like Stu Leonard and Aldi and a couple of the others, that they have found it very profitable to carry fewer items.
Yes,
instead of giving you the alphabet of everything that's available in a category, they focus on a handful. You know, they may carry 1,000 items rather than 5,000 items, and their volume is higher and they sell more, and they probably do better on the short trips too.
Yeah. Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I mean, you know, Stu Leonard, as I mentioned, does something like $100 million a year in their stores. A typical supermarket's going to do more like $20 million. So how come they can sell five times as much? Is it because they've succeeded in holding the shopper in the store a long time? No. As a matter of fact, it takes people less time to shop at a Stu Leonard's than it does at a Wegmans. Okay. I mean, the point is simply this, is Stu Leonard let's get back to the issue of SKU rationalization or limiting the choice, whatever. Okay, because there's more than one way to skin that cat. Okay, number one, yes, there is a huge cost, okay, to the shopper to have to make a choice between 100 items instead of making a choice between 3, okay? But there's more than one way to deal with that. Look, I buy a few books a month at Amazon, but one of the reasons I do business with them is because they have, if anybody has 50 million books, they probably have the one I want. Now, believe me, people go to stores in the same way. You walk into a store that's got 40 or 50,000 SKUs. One of the reasons you do is because you're comfortable. Man, they've got everything here. Okay? The problem isn't having everything there. In fact, having everything there is a very, very attractive feature. So Stu Leonard may have started with 800 SKUs, but he's up to 2,000. Why? Because he needs to attract more people to the store. You know, Aldi and Little are doing the same thing. Hey, Fresh and Easy is upping their SKU count. I mean, Walmart came in against their 3,500 with 10,000. Okay, but here's the problem they have. As they start building SKU count, they take the big head, the items that most people want to buy, and bury them in there. It'd be like Amazon ignoring what's the number one seller in this category, okay, and hiding it and saying, well, you know, we're not going to tell you. You just pick what you want. No, we're not going to tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, you know, I mentioned How We Decide as a book. I recommended it. Actually, that's the number one book on Amazon that sells with my book.
Interesting.
You know? That's not why I got it. Somebody recommended it to me some time ago is the reason I got it. But it's kind of interesting. Okay, but the point I'm getting at is the number one reason the retailer loses from this massive SKU count is then they refuse to have the guts to tell the shopper what to buy. Okay, and it's very simple, really. All you've got to do is put end caps, for example, which sell a huge amount of what sells in the store anyway. There's two major reasons end caps sell so well. Number one, limited selection, okay? But that doesn't detract from, I mean, you've got 10 items here on the end cap, you know, and you've got 1,500 on the aisle right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which is easier to make a decision, from these 10 or from these 1,500? And the second thing is, it's visually distinct. And mm-hmm. this is one of the problems in the aisle, is the shopper comes in and you've got an unbroken sea, okay, of offers. And an unbroken sea of offers is equivalent to no offers at all. I mean, you're just saying, oh, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff, okay? Now, one of the things that you can do, I mean, and we've recommended this, I recommend this to any retailer right now. Find out what the top 20 or 50 items are in your store that you sell. This is the customer's vote, okay? The customers are choosing. These are the top 20 items they want to buy. And we had one store that went around and put a little 4x4 foot flag on the shelf by each of these top items and said, this is our top seller in the category. And they had maybe 50 of these in an entire supermarket, okay? That's not very many, okay? That's one or two or three an aisle. Okay, so here's the point. They got a 52% lift on those items.
Hmm.
Okay? I mean, we're talking serious stuff. And quite frankly, you know, the promotion they used there was pathetically thin. But I will tell you, if they had put in five times as many of those tags, that it would have no effect. Okay, because a blizzard of offers is the same thing as no offer at all.
Right.
And so anyway.
It's blinding.
It's blinding. It's blinding.
Yeah.
You're saying, oh, you got you, everybody's walked into an aisle and seen, you know, 1,000 pink tags or blue tags or yellow tags or what the heck kind of, and who gives a rip, you know?
Mm.
I mean, this isn't communication, and you know, which brings us to another thing. I mean, people mostly communicate in the store emotionally by shape and color and whatever. They don't. I mean, words, you know, are not nearly as persuasive, and yet there's a lot of careful thought given to what to say here, what to
right.
say. Well, you know, you need to stop using words to say. Okay, and an end cap is one way. You don't have to put a sign on an end cap that says, "Oh, hey, here, buy here, buy here." No, you've shoved it right in the mainstream of traffic. It's only got a few items on it, okay, and the shopper's eye is stopped, and it's stopped not because this is terrific merchandise or a terrific sale. If you look at their eye, it comes to a sharp demarcation. Okay, this is very important. Okay, now I'm looking in the aisle, and my eye moves along here, and bang. Okay, there's a sudden change, and now I'm looking at an end cap. I move a few feet on, and it breaks and goes to aisle again. Okay, those demarcations essentially are signs to the shopper that here's an offer. Okay, and so, hey, you know, and there's not that many of them in the store. And, you know, so you have a heavy amount of selling going on there. And it isn't the pricing, believe me. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. You know, you have the consumer activists that scream bloody murder if the retailer puts merchandise on an end cap and it's not on special.
Okay? Yeah, because we're trained to think it is special.
Okay, but let me tell you something. This is the same thing as going from high-low pricing to EDLP. But I have heard more than one senior executive in retailers tell me, you know, they can scream all they want to, we're still going to do it. And it's a good thing because you have people who are basically what I call You know, they're the bottom feeder shoppers that have massive stacks of coupons and are racing around and systematic. I mean, I had a woman work for me one time that came in and told me she bought $200 worth of groceries for $20. Well, that's wonderful. Okay, that for her, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But the damage that is done to the retailing world, okay, suppliers and other shoppers by this is you know, it's more reasonable instead of having this high-low pricing to go with EDLP. You know what I'm talking about, everyday low pricing?
Oh,
you don't,
okay, yeah.
The prices don't go up and down. You don't have these super everything isn't, oh, now this is on special. Okay, now it's not. Okay, now it's on special. Now it's not. That's called high-low pricing. And and these people with coupons and racing around or whatever, they live and die on this stuff. Do you know in the Northeast, P&G, a number of years ago, attempted to withdraw couponing completely? And the consumers came out hammer and tongs. And after, it was a horrendous PR disaster. They ended up having to go back and install them. Coupons are economically stupid, stupid, stupid. The bottom line is they cost shoppers, the products that are couponed end up costing shoppers more because of the cost of managing this massive program, which is so, so inefficient. High-low pricing is inefficient. All aspects of it are. Okay, now I'm going to tell you something a senior executive told me, that back in the 90s, their store went from high-low pricing to EDLP, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They went from this up and down, up and down, up and down, trying to coax the shopper in. Now, when they do that, you know, they're marking stuff down, but other stuff is way up. I mean, they're figured. So it's kind of like a game, a contest between you and the retailer, okay? But in the 90s, this entire chain switched to EDLP. In other words, they didn't have promotionals anymore. Everything is a low price or as low as they can reasonably make it and still operate efficiently. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And he told me, he says, you have no idea the volume of hate mail we got from these consumerists, you know, that are, you know, whatever. And he said, but they stuck with their guns. They stuck with it for an entire year, and they continue today. It's still an EDLP operation. And mm-hmm. he told me that they hope those shoppers that were sending all of that hate mail to them are now shopping at their competitors. He told me that this was the first time, just to give you a clue, this was the first time in 50 years this chain had made any money selling groceries.
Wow.
Okay. Well, now, and if you realize that usually they don't make money selling groceries because they're getting paid by the manufacturers to put the stuff on the shelf. But they actually made a legitimate profit first time in 50 years.
And actually, this is the we're going to run out of time soon. This
okay.
is the thing I wanted to wind up with you about. You talk about where the money actually is in retail, particularly right now. We've been talking really primarily about the groceries, but you say it comes from four sources, and of them, I think consumers will be surprised to hear this. Consumer spending is actually the lowest contributing factor. Can you go through high to low where the stores actually?
Well, Well, in the typical, and you know, business models vary around the world, you know, and whatever. But in the American CPG industry, okay, which is the fast moving consumer goods, the stuff that people buy every day, the branded items and all of that, okay, the number one source of profits for retailers is from the brand supplier, the manufacturer, in slotting fees, rebates, promotional allowances, and other type of money. In fact, I can tell you, retailing is globally a $13 trillion business.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S. market alone, brand suppliers pay $1 trillion a year to the retailers. Okay? So that's their number one source of profits. Okay, number two is cash, interest on cash. That's float. In other words, they get the money, they collect the money from, as one retail executive told me years ago, the one good thing about retail is people leave their money cash on the counter, you know, and they hustle that money to the bank and immediately begin collecting on it and pay their suppliers as slowly as they can. There's a lot
right.
of money from that. So, number one, they're very good at negotiating with suppliers. Number two, they're very good at managing cash. Their banking business is huge. Number three is real estate, because they buy and develop property, which appreciates over the years and becomes worth a lot of money. That's their third source of profit. And their fourth source is margin on merchandise sold. And the high margin items are, quite frankly, going to mostly be the perimeter departments, the fresh meat, the deli, the bakery, the produce. These are departments that the retailer runs themselves. These are not participated in by the brand manufacturers for the most part. Okay, so that's where their expertise lies, is in that order, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, our time went by very, very quickly, and I want to tell people how to find your book and your website. Folks, you can find Herb Sorensen's new book, Inside the Mind of the Shopper, The Science of Retailing, at mrmedia.com, it's mrmedia.com, or amazon.com. And you can also learn more about what he does and the way he does it at insidethemindoftheshopper.com. That's all solid, insidethemindoftheshopper.com. Or his company is TNS Sorensen, and their website, which may be very similar, TNS-Sorensen, SORENSEN.com. And Herb, it was fascinating. I had way more things to talk to you about, but we covered an awful lot. The book is very interesting, quite an eye-opener, I think, particularly for consumers, and I wish you a lot of luck with it.
I appreciate that very much. Anytime.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on Mr. Media today.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for dozens more interviews with business executives and entrepreneurs, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversation with Isidore Sharp, the founder of Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts, and many, many others. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Pointer Online, MySpace, Facebook, NetVibes, Amazon, Multiply, Zanga, Digital Journal, Friendster, Orkut, Bebo, Tagged, iGoogle, Yahoo, Yahoo, I love the way that sounds, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, or Odeo. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. And subscribe to Mr. Media in iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews within the podcast section of iTunes and click the free subscribe button. It's that easy. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening.